Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Julie Ellenbecker, president of Ellenbecker Investment Group. EIG believes in the importance of education, allowing people to gain the knowledge to feel confident in their personal decisions. This show highlights the unique financial perspectives of its many guests, including economists, attorneys, book authors, business owners, and tax professionals. It is provided for general information purposes only and does not consider your particular investment objectives or financial situation and is not intended as recommendations appropriate for you. Before acting on information on this show, strongly consider seeking advice from your own financial advisor. The opinions expressed on Money Sense do not necessarily reflect the opinions of Ellenbecker Investment Group employees and leaders. Please enjoy today's show.
Money Sense is brought to you by Ellenbecker Investment Group, four-time recipient of the Better Business Bureau Torch Award for business ethics and integrity. Ellenbecker Investment Group is the only Wisconsin investment company to receive this prestigious award more than once by providing exceptional planning and extraordinary service each and every day. Go to ellenbecker.com and listen to Money Sense Saturdays at 2 and Sundays at noon.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And today, my guest is Dan Burris. Dan has been a guest many, many times over the years. And I always love to have him come on when we are in this time of uncertainty, and certainly with everything going on in the world, we are. But then you add in things like technology, and that just adds a whole nother in AI, our workforce, jobs, how do you hold a job? How do you get a job? We're going to talk about all those things today. But really, what I'd like to start out with is something that's been really near and dear to my heart, and that's really kids and talking about technology. And I know that for me, I've got a five-year-old granddaughter, great-granddaughter, and I bought her one of these little tablets that is completely protected by parental protection. But she's already asking, you know, wants to play on my cell phone, and she wants to play on the computer. And there are no protections, and there's gaps there. And so I was hoping that Dan could give us some insights, because one of the significant risks, some of them that I saw, were exposure to inappropriate content, violence, pornography, harmful ideologies, online predators who manipulate and groom children through social media or gaming platforms. And then there's cyberbullying, which can be relentless and leave lasting emotional scars. I remember when I was in school, I would do goofy things and the kids would tease me, but it was gone. The next day, somebody else did something goofy and it was gone. Now it's out there forever. There's the addiction to instant gratification, leading to anxiety, depression, and an inability to focus. And then, of course, lastly, I think something that we all see is emotional disconnection, leaving children feeling lonely despite constant digital engagement. Dan, where do we even start with some of those things? And it's almost like that thing of where the frog is put into the cold pot of water and they turn up the heat and eventually it's boiled. It's almost kind of like that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, first of all, thanks for having me back. Thank you very much. And let me start out because you were talking about AI in the workplace and other things that we'll talk about in here. So let me start out by saying I am an optimist. I am optimistic about the future. Now, why am I optimistic? Because pessimists never do anything. Why? Because they know it'll fail. So the only way we ever advance is to try things and experiment with things. And I think we don't live in a technology world. Yes, we do. But let's remember, we live in a human world. And it's all based on relationships. And you mentioned when you were a kid. I know when I was a kid long ago, I spent most of my time not in my parents' house. I spent most of it outside, with my buddies. And we were communicating, collaborating, in some cases innovating, because we were building tree forts in the trees and we were building tunnels and doing all kinds of stuff. And we were out in the woods, and when the creek would flood, we had to build a raft. And those are specific things that are just coming to my mind real quick off the top of my head. But what did I say?
The playground has changed. The playground has changed.
Exactly. But there was eyeball to eyeball communication. When a kid was sad, you knew they were sad because you could see it on their face, because you learned how to read that. And you could talk about it, and if they didn't want to talk about it, that was cool. But, you know, you learned a lot of things. So what I see happening, again, over time is it's the easiest job for a parent is to raise a screwed up kid. The hardest job for a parent is to raise a really good, well-balanced kid. Because why? You're going to put some effort into it. If you put no effort into it and plug them in and just say, good, that's a digital babysitter. I don't have to bother with them. You may not like the end result. So what I'm suggesting is having times when they're plugged in and times when they're unplugged. And by the way, let me give you a little tip as an adult listening to this. There's a time to plug in and a time to unplug. Are you plugged in constantly or have you actually stopped the scroll and unplugged a little bit and enjoyed that, which is enjoyable? And
well, and our kids follow us. Our kids watch us.
Our kids follow us. They are, you know, it's not what we say that they're paying attention to. It's what we do. It's our actions. And they're keeping track of all of that. So, so again, are we mirroring what we would like them to be, first of all? And secondly, are we doing the hard job of saying, here's the time that you can use your digital tool, whatever it might be, iPad, iPhone, whatever it is, depending on their age, of course. And so here's the time you can use it. Here's when you can't use it, when I want you doing something else, like go outside or, you know, play with your buddies or do something like that. And then having some guards around what they can do and can't do in terms of when they are using the tools. Again, it depends on the age and what kind of tool it is. But we have to put in some safeguards and do a little education of them. And one of the things that I've noticed about kids, especially when they're young, is saying don't doesn't work. Now, why not? Well, kids think in terms of pictures. By the way, humans think in terms of pictures. So don't isn't a picture. It does say, that's why when you say, don't let the cat out, or, you know, don't wet your bed. Well, you know, that doesn't help. There's no picture. What you want to do is stop saying don't and start telling them what you want them to do. Leave the cat in today. Leave your bed dry tonight. You see, now I see a picture. Now I see what you want. If you tell me what I don't want, it's gone. I don't get it. So again, let's stop using don't all the time because it's just, it's gone, and start telling them what you would like. What's the behavior you would like to get? And
I think I'm going to start that with my golf.
Yeah.
I'm going to start that with, instead of saying, don't go into the sand.
Well, yeah, you know, I've I ride a Harley Davidson motorcycle. One of the things I like about it is there is no reverse. I can't go back. I can only go forward in time. But the other thing I can tell you, having ridden motorcycles all of my adult life, ever since I could get a driver's license, that's the first thing I did. And that is, if there is a pothole up ahead and you look at it, you'll go right over it. You go where you look. So you have to look around it, and you won't, and you'll miss it every time. If you're looking at the sand trap, I know where you're going, right? So,
yes.
You know, because your brain is so powerful. So I want to make sure that we're focusing, again, using what you just talked about, in the right way. So maybe less don'ts and more do's about what we would like them to do. And also what the downside is, what the scary part is, the thing that you're worried about. So let's take a little action, and I think let's develop some times where they can. And by the way, they will not like it because they want to be on the device all the time. Why? The same reason you do. It's seductive. It's built to be seductive. It's built to engage you. It's built to keep you on all the time, which means you are completely out of balance as a human being, and you're out of touch with nature, which will get you even more out of balance. So the hard job is, we have to be parents and actually set some guidelines, which they will not like, but you have to tell them why. All right. So anyway, we could go on this. I'm just giving you some things that I've seen work over time. And, you know, again, I've started six companies over the years, but in the beginning, I was a teacher teaching, and I know these I've worked with a lot of kids in a lot of areas, and I had an education division of my company that's been in over 8,000 schools over the decades. And so we've got a lot of experience with kids, and I'm just giving you some things that I know back in the teacher days, regardless of the age that you're teaching, whether it's university or elementary school, it doesn't matter. It's easier for a teacher to not care. It's harder for a teacher to care and help them to learn the things they really need to learn. All right.
My guest today is Dan Burris, and we were just talking about kids and technology and some of the things to consider as a parent. But Dan is so much more than that. He has written several books. He has spoken all over the world. Dan is a leading futurist. He's a strategic advisor. He is a disruptive innovator expert and has written the book Flash Foresight, Anticipatory Organization. And I think, Dan, what we'll do is we'll take a break right now and then we'll come back and we'll talk about some of those other areas because we are really in this uncertain time and nobody likes uncertainty. And I think that if we can give people some idea of how to look through it through a different lens, that would be really helpful. And with that, we'll be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I am the founder and senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. My guest today is Dan Burris. And Dan, as I said earlier, has been on the show so many times. He can just tell it the way it is. One of the most interesting guests that I ever have, and also a really dear friend. And Dan, as we were talking during the break, you mentioned something I think is really important to just bring a conclusion to our first conversation is that I had mentioned that when I was a parent with my younger children, I loved having them in the car because I got them. I had the ability to talk to them, and it was a great time, even going to the grocery store. But now kids are on their phones all the time. Parents are on their phones. We just got to get back to communication and back to eating together and some of the simple things in lives that seem to be just being squandered away.
Yeah, well, I mean, a simple thing to do. And again, earlier I said it's harder to do the right things. It's easier to do the wrong things in a way. And the wrong things are to let kids determine their, what they're going to do, what they're going to eat, how they're going to use technology. I mean, that's easy. But one of the things is like if you're going out to dinner with the family, the minute you sit down, it's the parents and everybody gets out their phones and turns them off. Now, that's not easy, but what would that do? Well, that's going to stimulate either gamma boredom or you're going to have some conversations. And by the way, if you ever ask a kid, we'll just do a little funny thing, but what subject do you love most about school? Or what did you like about school yesterday? They will have nothing to say. But see, opposites work better. You start out with, well, what's the subject you like the least? Now they'll spill the beans. What didn't you like about school today? Oh, they'll have a whole lot of things. So, there are ways of getting a conversation going. It's just not the normal way of going. So let's have more conversations. Let's have more discussion. When we're on a vacation, if we're all plugged in, are we really on a vacation? Are we just with our devices? And why did we bother spending the money? Maybe there's some times that we intentionally unplug.
That sounds so good. You know, Dan, this is a world, crazy world right now of uncertainty on so many different platforms and levels. What are some of your suggestions when you're talking to the companies and the businesses that you're working with, helping them to be strategic as they move forward in this world of constant change?
Yeah, well, one of the things we have to do is balance uncertainty, and we always have uncertainty, and it has different levels. Like right now, there's a lot of uncertainty. The bar on uncertainty has been rise, and if all we have is uncertainty, strategy, whether it's a personal strategy or a business strategy based on uncertainty, has high risk. However, strategy, personal or business, based on certainty has low risk. So what we have to do is not what don't I know, but instead what do I know? Instead of what am I uncertain about, which is a big list, what am I certain about? So if we can balance that, for example, just in the last couple of weeks, one of the groups that I was working with was the surface and subsurface warfare leaders of the Navy. And what were we doing? Well, I was helping them with finding certainty and using the power of certainty because they have a lot of uncertainty. And agility is, again, reacting as quickly as you can to a disruption or problem after it happens. Reacting as quickly to a problem as after it erupts as possible. But being what I call anticipatory, balancing that, is to ask ourselves, what are we certain about? You know, from the past, I talk about those hard trends that we know will happen. For example, is AI going away? No. Is it getting more powerful every day? Well, yes. You know, after 5G wireless, is that it? No, you got 6G wireless, et cetera, et cetera. And baby boomers chronologically are not going to get younger. Matter of fact, we've got 10,000 a day turning 70. And by the way, that gives us some future facts that we can deal with, some problems that we could anticipate. So in other words, what we want to do is find balance. For example, right now, there's a lot of worry about, you know, are we heading for a recession? Are we heading for, you know, what's going on with the stock market? And you know this better than anyone because you help counsel people. But I would say, well, there is a science of cycles. There's business cycles, weather cycles, biological cycles, economic cycles. There are the tides that come in and go out that you can predict. A astronomer can tell you in 2040 in March exactly when we'll have a full moon. Stocks, when they go down, will they go down forever? No, they'll go back up again. Will they go up again forever? No, they'll go back down. Those are cycles. So we know that, you know, there's opportunities in cycles. You play the cycle. For example, if there is a sales cycle, I like to have the sale completed before the cycle begins. You see what I'm doing is I know there's a cycle, so I can use it to my advantage. So there are cycles. There are also permanent linear changes. These are based on exponential technologies that are not going back and forth. Again, smartphones will get smarter. AI, there will be more of it. The key is, how are we using it? What kind of safeguards are we putting in place? So I would start in this uncertain world by asking yourself, what are some of the things that I can be certain about? And you will be amazed at the list that you'll get. I mean, again, I mentioned working with the leaders of the Navy. That was about a week and a half ago. Since then, I have worked with the leaders of the largest global mining company in the world. I've worked with the big group of CFOs from all over the country of the biggest companies. Another group that I worked with was the healthcare benefit managers of all the big companies. In other words, look at the variety here. And I just recently worked with the city leaders. And so they're all different, but we have a lot of things in common. And that is, again, we've got to balance certainty with uncertainty. Those things that we know, I call future facts, from the things that I can, that are uncertain. So I think I'll let you ask me some questions. I just laid out some foundations there. And of course, if anyone wants to know a little bit more about separating what I call those hard trend future facts that will happen from this, what I call soft trends, those trends that might happen that are based on assumptions. Notice I didn't say it won't happen, but might happen. Different risk levels there. You can go to burrus.com, B-U-R-R-U-S.com if you want, or get my latest book, Anticipate Organization, and dive in.
You know, Dan, one of the things that I'm curious about is, how do you get people, you present the certainty and the uncertainty, they can see it. How do you get them to move on it? How do you get them to actually take what you've shared with them and put it into play? and to put it into their world? Or don't they? Do they?
Oh, they definitely do. Well, one of the keys is, again, taking complexity and simplifying it enough so that you can remember it and take action on it. So like when I'm speaking, let's say for an hour to a group, and I don't give the same speech. I do a lot of customizing. However, there are a lot of themes that are in there, including helping them to understand separating the hard trends that will happen from the soft trends that might happen, knowing that difference. So once I help them to see that as I'm speaking, I kind of start out easy and simple by asking for a show of hands. Now, if you've ever been in an audience, I know you all have, and a speaker asks you to raise your hand, even if you agree with them, a lot of you won't put your hand up because you just don't want to do it. So I've done an opposite. See, I've got one of the principles I use is opposites work better. So what I do is I will say, all right, we went from 3G wireless to 4G wireless to 5G wireless. Raise your hand high if you think that's it. No one ever puts their hand up. I say, are you sure? No one puts their hand up. Okay, good. We have a certainty. And then we're putting a lot in the cloud. We're putting a lot up in the cloud. Raise your hand if you think the cloud is going to be full. No one puts their hand up. Okay, we got another certainty. Baby boomers. We got 68 million of them in the United States. Raise your hand if you think they're going to get chronologically younger. No one puts their hand up. And regulations. Raise your hand high if you think, well, we're not going to get any new regulations on cybersecurity. No one puts their hand up. And I'm talking, I've surveyed literally millions of live audiences. Not the number of audiences, people in those audiences.
People, yes.
Because, I mean, last year I had an audience of 20,000. The second biggest was 10,000. So I have a lot of big audiences as well as smaller ones. So my point is, I'm starting to change how they think. I'm starting to help them to see by taking some simple things like I just shared with you and saying, oh, yeah, okay, that's something we all can agree on. By the way, in those audiences, there's a mixture of Democrats and Republicans in the United States, and they're all agreeing. That's an interesting thing. When you get people that are in a politically divided nation and they're agreeing on everything, that's where the power of certainty comes in. It's really quite powerful. So to finish answering your question, towards the end of my speech, we'll take 90 seconds. I'll give you an example. I just had 1,000 CEOs of tech companies in one of my speeches about 3 weeks ago. So they're all different tech companies. They're all CEOs. There's 1,000 of them. I've now helped them to understand hard versus soft trends. So I tell them, all right, I'd like you to write down one hard trend certainty you know will happen and a related opportunity and make it a good one. Why? Because you're only writing one down. It'll take you 90 seconds, but we got 1,000 smart CEOs in the room writing one down and an opportunity. I'm going to collect them all. I'm going to put them together in a report. There will be some soft trends in there. Good. I love those too. We'll put those in the soft trend pile and I'll give it back to you 2 weeks later so that you have this giant list of hard trends and opportunities. Why? Because most of us tend to be, by default, crisis managers. But there is...
Reactive.
Yeah.
Very reactive.
So there is more opportunity, and I want everyone listening, more opportunity right now than ever on the planet to not just change, but transform every business process, product, and service, even in these times of uncertainty. There's that's something we can be certain about. The tools are there to do it. So what I ask them to do is to spend 1 hour a week, put it in their calendar as an opportunity manager. Instead of looking at all the things you're uncertain about, what are you certain about? What are those hard trends? What are those opportunities? Pick one and make it happen. And you know what? When they see that report, it is thousands. You know, there's so many hard trends. It's amazing. And each one has an opportunity attached to it. You get people to change how they think.
My guest today is Dan Burris. He is, as I said earlier, and you can tell, a leading futurist, a strategic advisor, and he really does help individuals around the world really become anticipatory in terms of what they're faced with in whatever industry they are. But Dan, when we come back, I'm kind of interested in knowing how does this leaders that you're talking to, how do they filter that into their employees and how do they build that team that supports what they've learned? And with that, we'll be right back.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. I'm the founder and the senior wealth advisor for the Ellenbecker Investment Group. And if you'd like to know more, if you want to put a voice and a face together, you can go to ellenbecker.com. My guest today is Dan Burris, and we have just been talking about kids and really the uncertainty that parents have as if they're managing the technology that their children are being exposed to. So if you weren't on and didn't have the opportunity to listen to it, go to ellenbecker.com, go to Money Sense Radio, and you can hear the first part of the show on kids. We are going to talk a little bit about AI, and I threw a question out there to Dan that so often I know myself as a leader in a company, I hear something really great, and then I have to really figure out how am I going to pass that down, filter that down into my employees so that they too, so that we're a team, that we're all working from the same strategic point. How does a person do that, Dan? A leader.
One of the things that I talk to and suggest to all leaders, and again, I'm helping them to understand how to identify these future facts, these hard trends, and there are thousands of them, by the way, and separate those from those soft trends that may or may not happen. So when you are talking to people, if you give them uncertainty, they don't have confidence. So if you say, as a leader, here's what I think will happen, that means that's what you think will happen, and I may or may not agree with it. So am I going to work hard at what you think will happen? Well, maybe. But if you know it will happen, that's different. So you need to learn how to, before you talk to people, learn how to speak in future facts. So that instead of saying, here's what I think will happen, instead you will be saying, here's what I know will happen based on the hard trends that are shaping the future. And by the way, if any of you think this is not a hard trend, you think it's a soft trend, please raise your hand. I'd love to hear what you have to say. Remember, I've surveyed tens of thousands of people. I never get a hand coming up disagreeing. So you learn how to speak in terms of future facts. What does that do? When you have certainty, this is really important to understand. When you have certainty, you have the confidence to make a bold move. When you have uncertainty, you don't have the confidence. So you want people to have confidence. So as a leader, you need to separate those out. And by the way, if you have something that is a soft trend you're sharing with them, I love soft trends as well. Those are based on assumptions. What do I love about a soft trend? If you don't like it, you can change it. So you can say, now here's a couple of soft trends. Our sales have been going down lately, and they've been going down for the last year. And it looks like in our industry, they will continue to go down. However, of course, that's a soft trend. We can ride that down to the bottom with everybody else. Or, you know what we could do? We could do something different. We can put in some new strategies to take advantage of that and actually bring ours up while the rest of them go down. You see what I'm talking about? So you can use advantages of both soft and hard. So what I'm getting at is two key things I love to teach. One is all trends are either hard trends based on future facts that will happen. And there's opportunities around that. It lets you see problems before you have them so you can pre-solve them. And it lets you see disruptions before they disrupt, turning disruption into a choice. And then the soft trends are assumptions that may or may not happen. And the advantage is if you don't like it, you can change it. So right now we have trade wars already invoked, already taking place. And by the way, if we say we put a tariff on and then we take it off and we put it on again, take it off, you know, that still is a trade war taking place. And major companies, especially that have nuclear capabilities, don't tend to attack each other. Let's face it, they have nuclear capabilities. The only way to attack each other is with a trade war. I mean, it's economic war. So we've already invoked some economic warfare that's taking place. Again, I'm not making a political judgment here. I'm just saying, hey, watch the news. That's what's taking place. It creates a lot of uncertainty. But there is advantages in that uncertainty. There are things that you can do. Remember, if there will we have trade wars forever? No, that's not a hard trend. Will the trade war last for the next year? That's not a hard trend. That's not a future fact. That's an assumption. That's a soft trend. And by the way, so since that's soft, And we have a lot of uncertainty. And uncertainty arising seems to be what, a hard trend that will stay that way forever? No, that's a soft trend. That's here and may, and we'll get less. We just don't know when. So what do I do? I say, well, what is the strategies I can put in place to take advantage of that uncertainty? Because my customers have uncertainty. Well, I want to try to help them, don't I? What can I do to give them a little more certainty in dealing with me? You see? So what I'm getting at is there's advantages, and no matter what happens, you have to weigh it through. So as a leader, you need to be able to separate the soft from the hard and help people to see the advantages to give them the confidence to make bold moves.
I think about some of the things that are happening in the world, Dan, that and how, so someone who's a small mom and pop business owner, I mean, the fear that they have that Amazon is going to take over or some of these big corporations. I mean, helping these smaller companies or any companies to see the advantages or the soft trends or hard trends in their own industry and not be puffed out. You know, I hear that all the time.
Yeah. Well, I'll give you an example. First of all, if I was a small company and let's say a Walmart was coming into town, because that's kind of like a physical Amazon. Right?
Yes.
So I'm in a small town and, oh my God, Walmart's coming into town. Does that mean I'm going to go out of business? Well, if I try to compete with them, yes. But what I want to do is see what do they do real badly? Because, you know, no one can do everything great. So what is it that they're not good at? I need to be extraordinary at what they're bad at. And you know what? I'll have plenty of business. Again, by the way, that's another opposite, isn't it? Speaking of that, I was...
It's a great way to look at it. It's a different lens. It's a great way because...
There's opportunity everywhere, you know?
You hear that with restaurants. You hear that with stores. You hear it with little gas stations that they're going to be puffed out, you know? But that isn't necessarily the way it has to end.
No, as a matter of fact, I forget how many years ago it was. It was a little while ago now, before the pandemic happened, actually. But I was speaking to the leaders of Kohl's. And which is a Wisconsin-based, retailer. That's, of course, big. And their biggest worry and enemy was Amazon. So what I said to them in my speech to them was, I remember something that Abraham Lincoln said, the best way to defeat an enemy is to make him a friend. So I said, why don't we, as Kohl's, take returns in our Kohl's stores for Amazon, and then we'll get more foot traffic into Kohl's. Well, as you probably know, being in Wisconsin, Kohl's did indeed do that, and it really helped them out. Well, you know, that strategy came from that speech. And basically, I was giving them the same thing I'm giving all of you, and that is, you turn it around. You look at, you know, there is advantages in everything.
Well, and that concept is fabulous because you've got to go into Kohl's. They walk you to the back of the store. You walk through all of the merchandise in Kohl's, and there's a good chance you might buy something.
Right. And
it was a great idea.
Yeah, and it worked quite well. So, but again, whatever strategy you're put into place, and whether this is Kohl's or anybody else, realizes that if it's successful, others will start copying it. So what you have to have is the next one in mind so you can always stay ahead. That's called anticipatory. See, most of us develop a cash cow and then we just keep milking it and wonder why the margins are so thin. Instead of what's my new bouncing baby cash cow that I can create while I continue to milk the old cash cow, because that's where the new margins come from.
My guest today is Dan Burris, and we have been talking about so many wonderful different topics today. We're going to take a quick break, and we're going to touch on AI, because that is something that everybody is interested in. I have people say, I'm never going to do that. And then I've got other people that say, oh my God, it's changed my life. So let's take a break, and with that, we will be right back. Welcome to Money Sense. I'm Karen Ellenbecker. My guest today is Dan Burris. He is an amazing guy, an amazing friend, and I feel for all of us that we are so blessed to be able to have him come and talk to my audience about so many of these different things. And one of them that I know everyone is interested in hearing more about is AI and how it is changing the future. And, you know, Dan, you always say there's good things about it and there's difficult things about it.
Yeah, well, let's put it this way. AI can do right now, even without any further advances, amazingly bad things. By the way, right now, without any new advances, AI can do amazingly wonderful things. I would like to suggest that all of you listening to this are really good people. Why don't we use AI to do amazingly wonderful things while we protect ourselves from the people that are doing amazingly bad things? By the way, one of the ways of protecting yourself is to have what I call a zero trust strategy. So when I get a text from the bank already, I don't trust it. When I get an email from whoever, I have to make sure and verify. If I've got some information that's given me, I want to make sure that I verified its accuracy, right? Check several sources. So again, zero trust can help you to protect. But let's look at what we can do. And I was interviewed back when ChatGPT first came out, and the interviewer asked me, will humans be replaced by AI? And my answer was, humans will be replaced by humans using AI. So, and now let me give you a perfect example. And that is, if someone has cancer, they're going to probably go to an oncologist. That's the doctor that treats cancer patients. And right now, AI has absorbed and learned everything there is to know about oncology. It's seen all the x-rays, all the MRIs. It knows every test that was done. It knows all that stuff. No human doctor can know all of that. So if you know somebody that has cancer, I'm going to give you three choices. Number one, a really great human oncologist. Number two, just AI. Number three, a great human oncologist that has access to AI. Bingo. That's called augmented thinking. It's going to help us. So instead of replacing us, it's going to help us. Karen, there's no such thing as artificial wisdom. So there are things that we as humans can do that AI will have trouble doing. Absolutely. Why? Because it's AI. And just like the opposite is true too, there's things that AI can do that a single human can't do. Good. Hey, we could be a good team together. So if I'm a plumber and I'm a young plumber that's going in to put in a new hot water heater in your place, and I've actually never done that before, I'll have a little thing in my ear that is going to a little AI that I've got, and my little hat's going to have a little 4K, by the way, the future is what? 8K, followed by what? 16K camera, the size of a fly's eye on there so that it can see what I'm looking at, and it can help me install and troubleshoot that thing right there in real time. So I'm just saying, even whether you're a plumber or a bricklayer or whatever, it can help you out. So I would suggest that we become and start to learn a little bit more of how to use it, experiment with it. I'll give you an example of a fun thing. You know how you like to read books to or stories to your kids, your little kids at night. And I had a friend of mine that decided to use AI and asked the kids, well, what story would you like to create tonight that I read to you? And they put in where they wanted it to be, what kind of characters they wanted in it and all of that. Then he had, in this case, ChatGPT write the story, and he read their story to them that night. And it was a really cool story. Well, you know, all of a sudden, what are you doing? You're engaging the kids, but you're using AI because they're actually creating the story. And then the parents reading it. I mean, wow, that's kind of cool. A business example, I had a CEO recently say, I had my biggest customer text me, and he was really upset. And remember, this is the biggest customer, mid-sized company. And he says, I was about to write the response, and I thought, you know what? I'll bounce it off a chat. So he didn't describe the name of the company or the name of the person, but he put in the problem, the issue, and said, write a response that'll turn him around. And that took 20 seconds, by the way. And he said, the response was so good, he broke my rule. By the way, my rule is let AI do 80% of it and you do the last 20% because you need to humanize it, check the sources, and do all of that stuff. He said, it was so good, I broke that rule. I just sent it the way it was. He said, less than 15 minutes later, I got a phone call, not a text, from that CEO who now was happy and everything was good. Now, here's what the CEO said. I could have done that without chat. I could have done it. Would have taken me as my biggest customer. I probably would have anguished about an hour and a half writing that thing. In this case, I was done with it in a minute and I got a positive result. What are we talking? Productivity. So I would say, why don't we embrace and see what it can do for us? And it would be pretty amazing. If you want to find out how you can do amazing things with it, I have a report that's free that I publish. You can go to AIStrategyReport.com and download it. It'll give you the top tools, how to use them. They're very easy. Just try it. Matter of fact, if you're not sure how to use it, ask it how to use it, and it'll tell you. And then you can also go to Burrus, BURRUS.com, and that's where you can find more about the other things that I do, books and consulting and speaking and learning systems and so on. So there's plenty of ways to interact. And by the way, if you're on LinkedIn, I've got 1.2 million followers. Why don't you jump in, join the conversation? I communicate there a lot.
We have just about 3 minutes or 4 minutes. What about jobs for people today that are trying to figure out how to get a job, how to hold a job? Interviews are different. Everything is different.
Right. Everything is changing. So if everything is changing and I'm not changing, I will become less relevant. I think that makes sense. So if everything around you is changing, that means I need to do a little changing myself. That means maybe I need to be anticipatory versus reactionary instead of waiting for AI to take my job. I want to do, remember what I talked about with the doctor, right? I want to see how AI can help me be better at what I do. And by the way, it can. It can help you to do that. Again, my AI report will help you get some tools on that. I just was giving a speech and a young guy came up. I'd say he was maybe 23, 24. He was new to the sales and marketing department of the company that he was in. And he said, boy, I'm the youngest. I mean, most of them are in the 30s, 40s, 50s. I'm the only one that's using AI to help me. And he said, wow, I'm the one who's getting all the bonuses. I'm the one who's getting all the advances. They're crazy for not using AI. It's helping me. Holy cow, what I can do with it. Well, you know, the truth is, those other people should be doing that. It's a productivity revolution, making us all a little more productive. So let's go back to the 80-20 rule. AI will not get you 100% there from start, but it'll get you 80% there. Well, good. Now we don't have to have a blank sheet in front of me. Then I add me, my humanity to it, my knowing the people, knowing what I want to do. I check sources. Remember, it can make things up. Make sure it's not making something up that I don't like. Looking for the things that I do like instead of the things I don't like. And I think if you aren't using it now, I would suggest you start using it because you're going to appear less relevant if you're not. And you don't,
you know, Dan, when you talk about a salesman using it for his productivity and that, I know that people can go to your website and get your get the papers that you've done on AI. But when you say that, what can they do? How does it help them with their productivity?
Oh, my God. I'll give you an example. You could put a prompt in that that says, how do I overcome an objection to price that shifts them away from price to value? And if it knows the company you're in, if it knows your role as a salesperson, which it should, because when you set up a profile of yourself, you say what you are and what you do, it knows that what you sell, you would be shocked at how great the answer will be. Now, what's it gonna do? It's gonna give you ideas.
Yes, so, because I think for most people, AI is just frightening. They don't even know where to begin.
Well, again, it starts with, back to that salesperson, I might put in a prompt of, what is the best way I, as a salesperson who is selling this, describe it, to this type of customer, describe that customer, that will give me a competitive advantage in the marketplace? Well, you'll get some great ideas right there. Bing, bang, 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 bang. And you'll start saying, wow, I got to use this more.
Amazing.
You see how I'm giving you ideas on this? Just start throwing stuff in. It's amazing what it can do.
Practice it. I mean, I know on one of the other shows you mentioned your friend who did a poem, and I did it for my son-in-law. I was talking to him, and in front of him, I just said all the wonderful things I liked about him. And I said, can you create a poem? And a poem came out. My son-in-law looked at me like, I can't believe it. And it was instantaneous. I mean, it was beautiful and fun. I must add, you can have a lot of fun in doing things and being creative, just like that parent reading a book. My guest today is Dan Burris, and he has given us some great ideas. Dan, you want to tell us again about your books and your webpage?
Yeah, The Anticipatory Organization, which has been a bestseller. It sounds like it's just for companies, but it actually will change you as an individual and give you some great tools. That one you can find, of course, on Amazon, but you can find all of my stuff at Burris, BURRUS.com.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you for sharing all your knowledge with us and the time you take to come on the show. And as always, I hope that I've made a difference in your personal and financial well-being. Remember, before we plan, before we advise, before we invest, we always listen. Have a great weekend. Bye.